south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Once again, I'll take a few seconds to mention my upcoming July 2014 Expat Wisdom Seminar in Central America. Time to get your ducks all lined up, because remember, I'm only inviting 25 people along. Just go to expatwisdom.com and click on the Latin seminar link for full details. And if you have questions, just send me an email at theexpatfiles@gmail.com or johnny@expatwisdom.com. Time's a-wasting, so you better get on it. Okay, now continuing on with last show's topic, the big real estate bubble that's going on down here in Latin America. Right before the show ended last time, I mentioned that a young doctor friend of mine who'd signed a long-term rent contract about 2 or 3 years ago in a brand new office tower complex, he said that when he and his fellow renters found out that the office building going up across the street being built by the same developer and a virtually identical building too. Anyway, the developer was offering new renters identical office space at a lower price than he'd signed on for a year or two before. Then he and a few of his fellow renters decided to confront the developer. Why should they be paying more in an identical space in an older building, whereas new and prospective renters in a building that wasn't even finished yet would be paying lower rates? They knew something was definitely wrong with that situation. And the developer, well, he quickly caved and lowered their rents without much of a squabble at all, even though they had a contract. So why is it that all of a sudden you can, if you're smart, negotiate your rent downward? Well, that's because there's a huge glut of empty office space and hundreds, if not thousands, of new units coming online every month. And that's happening in every medium and large city in Latin America. Now, of course, the example I gave was with commercial space. And, of course, it's also happening in the housing sector, too. So if you're a renter, you really do have your landlord by the so-called cojones. Meaning when your annual or six-month rental contract comes up for renewal, and that goes for even if you signed a long-term contract with options. If you don't ask for a break, a lower rate, anywhere from 5 to 25%, or ask for something else like a free month or maintenance thrown in, some sweetener to the deal anyway, then you're just being foolish and not taking advantage of what that bubble is doing down here. In the first place, if you don't ask, you'll never know. In the second place, landlords down here are in a pinch, and they well know that if you move out, there's a chance they might not rent the place for months, and they'll lose all that money. And they know they got you, a gringo, a bird in the hand who pays regularly, the checks don't bounce, and gringos pay on time. At least I think most of us do. So anyway, don't be afraid to play that real estate bubble card in your favor. You're crazy if you don't. Every landlord I know is facing his own brand of occupancy problems. And the fact is, the ones that were hard-nosed jerks that never suffered before because they thought real estate always goes up, 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 and never down, they're starting to feel it now. And the pain is just beginning, but the pain is on them, not us. If you're a renter right now, you're the one who's going to be in the driver's seat, and soon, buyers with cash will really clean up. And don't worry, I've got my finger right on the pulse of this market, and I'll let you know just when and where to jump in and where not to. Because soon there will be so many deals out there, you'll have your pick of the litter. However, it's not as easy as you think. For example, you might find a steal on a beachfront penthouse apartment at 20 cents on the dollar, but you don't want to be the only one in the complex. You know what I mean? You have to have a decent occupancy rate so that the maintenance money's coming in to maintain the whole thing. You know, keep up the standards of the neighborhood. You don't want to be the only person in a beautiful penthouse apartment when the building or the complex is only 30% occupied. You know what I mean? And like I may have said before, just a few months ago, I was looking around at apartments to gauge the market in Salvador, Guatemala, Nicaragua, and Honduras. Just checking out the rentals in the local classifieds and on the bulletin boards in those big grocery stores. That's the best way to do it, remember? Anyway, I made the rounds in a smattering of medium and large-sized cities off the Gringo Tourist Trail. And I visited some very beautiful apartment complexes and housing developments, most of them brand new, with prices ranging from $250 a month to about $700 a month. And a young Latin guy showing me around, a freelance real estate guy working on commission. And by the way, I got his name from a listing on one of those supermarket bulletin boards. I would never use a big real estate agency like CityMax or Century 21, unless I just landed in a town and wanted to get a free tour. Then I would gladly call them up and have one of their agents give me a free tour through the city, though he won't know it's a tour. I say usually it's worth it to spend a day or two with those guys, make them use their car and their gas. But don't believe anything they say about the real estate market, because they have no idea what a bubble is either, even though they're right in the middle of it. And believe me, these CityMax, RE/MAX, and Century 21 guys, they will jump at the chance to take a gringo around, since off the tourist trail, you might be the first one they ever had in the car. The fact is, a hot gringo on the line like you will be the big talk around the RE/MAX office for a couple of days, believe me. All the other agents in the office will be a bit jealous they didn't snag a prize like you, even though you're just using them. And by all means, use them and get them to buy you milk and cookies, too. Only, you should never buy anything from them. Never. Anyway, after my new friend, the freelance real estate agent that I got off the bulletin board, after we got to talking a bit for a while and bonding, he told me that most of the 9 or 10 brand new units that we looked at that day, in various upper middle class developments, most of them had been on the rental market for at least 6 months, and some of them did not have a single walkthrough, a single looker in all that time. So, it did take him a while to admit that the market was extremely soft and unusual. Now, if that doesn't scream real estate bubble, I don't know what does. But when I mentioned the idea of the bubble to that young real estate guy, he still didn't get it. Ever the optimist, like everyone in the bubble always is, he said, after the rainy season, the market should come roaring back. And I asked him why he felt that was so, and he said, well, that's what all the other guys are saying. Need I say more? Here he is showing me rental units that haven't been walked into in 6 months, and I have to explain to him what a real estate bubble is. And when I asked him if he was worried about it, or worried about his future as a real estate broker, he told me he was trained and has a degree in architecture. Then, when I asked him why he wasn't in the field, why wasn't he an architect in this huge building boom, he said, unfortunately, and in Spanish it's unfortunadamente. Now you have to be down here quite a while to get that tongue twister. Anyway, he lamented the fact that almost all the housing developments and commercial properties are being done by huge developers and they have their own architects and construction firms. And he also said, even if you're an architect or a civil engineer, unless you've got contacts or connections, and they call that cuello down here, C-U-E-L-L-O, cuello. That means inside connections. Anyway, you end up working at Office Depot, selling real estate, or working at a hardware store. Oh, and just one more thing. This guy did speak some English. On a 1 to 10, maybe a 6.5. Pretty good. Anyone could basically understand him. And here's another good fact I got out of him. He said that if you go to an architecture school that's private, you always learn pretty good English, and that's what he did. He said they even had some gringos teaching English at his school. But if you go to a public one, one that's a state school, you know, one of those national schools I always talk about that have busted windows and bathrooms that don't have plumbing that works and walkways and halls that stink like urine, etc., because that's actually a place where a lot of people relieve themselves. But, you know, they're basically free and you get what you pay for, right? And people who don't have money generally come from the lower classes, and the lower classes have lower cultural values, and they're the guys that whip it out on the street. So why wouldn't they have the same habits in the halls and walkways of their schools, too? But that's another story, and I talked about that in a past show. Anyway, suffice it to say that down here, it's a huge renter's market. Now, that's not to say there aren't some real estate hotspots in and off the Gringo Tourist Trail where vacancies are very low and rents are high. And that would be in the business and banking area of any medium and large city, almost always where the first world franchise hotels are, like the Princess and the Hyatt and the Hilton and the Radisson and the Continental, etc. It's the same thing you see with business districts in cities in the States. There are always going to be certain islands of prosperity and high rents, no matter how the economy's doing in the rest of the country. If you're in one of the high-end business districts in Boston, New York, or Cleveland, where all the big banks and hotels are, as well as convention centers and high-end shopping malls, etc., Rents are artificially high compared to places outside that zone, and vacancy rates quite low. But generally, as soon as you get about a mile or two outside that commercial area, in whatever Latin city you might be talking about, whether it's on or off the tourist trail, rents start dropping like a rock. Now, because Latin cities are so heavily built up and densely populated in the center, the massive new subdivisions and housing projects are always at least 5 miles away from the center city. In fact, with larger cities of 500,000 or so, some of the big new housing, commercial, and development projects are actually what we might call bedroom communities and can be up to 20 or even 25 miles away from the center city. Although that term bedroom community is not on the radar down here yet. So if you mention it or try to translate it into Spanish, they won't know what you're talking about. Yep, it's that lag time effect again. Remember, it's like that word walk-in closet, which Latins still can't get straight down here off the tourist trail. When they use it, they spell it walking, W-A-L-K-I-N-G, like the closet's going to get up and walk away. Walking closet. Now, you won't see that much on the Gringo tourist trail anymore, but you used to. And that's what happens when Latins try to show off their first world gringoisms and aren't proficient enough with the language to know that they've screwed it up. But when you're on the Gringo tourist trail, Latins eventually pick up on the fact that they've screwed up the language and correct it. That's why you see most of the twisted English language screw-ups off the Gringo tourist trail, because we're not around to laugh and correct them. Anyway, nearly all the big housing developments are out in the burbs. That's where the biggest part of the housing bubble is, while the commercial real estate bubble is in both places, within the cities and out in the burbs. Now, about that bubble in the burbs. If you rent or buy out there, you're probably going to need a decent car because things are pretty spread out. And by the way, like in the States, most people in the burbs commute in and out of the big city for their day jobs. So the bottom line is, there is a real estate bubble everywhere, but when you get 5 or 6 or 10 miles out of the city, that's where the bubble is really exploding. There, it's becoming a renter's paradise. And that includes spaces in commercial malls and shopping centers, too. Just a little ways out from practically every Latin city, that's where everything's overbuilt, and that's where all those vacancies are. So if you plan on renting, make them a lowball offer and don't budge. And while you're at it, put in some lowball offers on some of the other vacant spaces in the area. There'll be plenty to choose from, believe me. So that's what I suggest for gringos and expats who first come down. Have a look through some of these projects that are sometimes totally vacant and get yourself a great deal on a rental in a brand new apartment. Because, you know, there's nothing like being the first one into an apartment complex or a house, right? Everything's brand new, the walls are perfect, the plumbing great, the sinks and fixtures sparkling new. And believe it or not, if you're off the Gringo tourist trail, you could get something like that easily. First world style 3-bedroom house or apartment for around $300 to $400 a month. And sometimes it'll include cable, water, and they'll throw in maintenance too. Believe me, landlords are desperate for qualified renters and buyers. And on top of that, you've got that Gringo advantage going for you too. And that puts you on top of the list of preferred clients. But what about the locals? How are they handling and reacting to the big bubble? Let's face it, off the Gringo tourist trail, they are the potential clients for that rental market. Not gringos, there's just way too few of us to matter. Well, let me illustrate that with a little story. Now, if you remember in the last show, I mentioned that a well-established doctor down here makes about $16,000 to $18,000 a year. And I'm talking about a big city doctor off the Gringo tourist trail. At least I think I mentioned that on the last show, but if I didn't, I did now. Okay, now follow me on this one. According to banking standards and practices down here, the average Latin American adult can take out a mortgage that's no more than 6 times his yearly salary, provided, of course, he qualifies and has good credit and all that. Also, provided he could scrape up the cash down payment, which, like I said before, used to be 30%, but now is 5 or 10. And as for the other case, when you're not dealing with a bank, when you're buying into a project and the developer is self-financing, then you might not even need a down payment. We'll talk about that case in a little while, but for now, let's stick with bank financing for a minute. In any event, let's go through some simple numbers here. If the average well-established doctor makes, let's say, $17,000 a year, which, by the way, is about 4 to 5 times the average salary down here in Latin America. And as you well know, that would be poverty row up in Cleveland. A guy making that in the States would definitely be on food stamps, housing assistance, and a dozen odd other government programs. No wonder Latins still call it the American dream. And don't think that every Latin that slips into the U.S. illegally doesn't know those programs exist. They do. Why? Because they've all got friends and relatives up in the States who told them all about it. It's not like the U.S. welfare system and safety net is an unknown commodity down here in Latin America. In fact, every Latin I've ever talked to down here, no matter what economic status he's in, is well aware that Americans get free money if they don't work. Not to mention, a good majority of the Latins down here also know that up in the States, a person that doesn't work gets free food and free medical and a free housing allowance, free water, free electric and utilities, and that people who don't work have all the cable channels, flat-screen TVs, cell phones, the works, some of which the average Latin American working person can't afford. And the topper is, and I've talked to many Latins about this, they also know that the average person in the States that doesn't work, and maybe never worked in their whole lives, still have and drive cars, their own cars. Now remember, 90% of the Latin population cannot afford a car. Not even a rust bucket piece of junk. So it's simply amazing when they hear that people in the States who sometimes never worked a day in their life, not only drive, but often own their own cars. It might sound like I'm oversimplifying that, but I invite you when you come on down to speak to the average Latin guy at a party or wherever and ask him or her if they've heard about such a thing, and you'd be surprised how much they know about our welfare and safety net system. It's what expat Eddie calls rocket fuel for the American dream. And I want you to notice one thing when you ask a Latin down here about that. Notice how animated they suddenly get when they talk about it, because it really does blow their minds. But I digress, and let's get back to our doctor friend. Anyway, our doctor friend, making $17,000 a year, should be able to afford a mortgage worth 6 times that, or almost exactly $100,000. Now, here's where the numbers don't quite work out. According to statistics down here in Central America and in Mexico, the average price of a brand new house in a housing development coming online right now is about $98,000. You know what that means? All these thousands and thousands of brand new average houses coming online worth about $100,000 each can only be picked up by professional people and businessmen like your average doctor, who down here would be in the upper middle class. That's the upper 4 or 5 percentile of society, meaning the rest of the 95 or 96% of the Latin population that make under $17,000 a year, they're SOL. They can't afford, nor can they qualify, for a mortgage on one of these average new houses that make up most of this huge building bubble. And as you might have noticed, the average doctor can just barely qualify for a mortgage like that, too, which should tell you exactly what's wrong with the real estate market here. So why haven't developers here figured that out already? Go figure. It really is a bubble mentality, too. The fact is, it's a terrific renter's market. But it's obvious, buying a house or an office and taking on a mortgage would be one of the stupidest things you could ever do. Even if it's a no-money-down developer finance situation, think for a second about who your next-door neighbors and the rest of the folks in your subdivision are going to be. People that also put almost no money down. Most of them absolutely stretched to or beyond their credit limit. Why do you think they chose that subdivision for the low-money or no-money-down option? Think of it. If developers are building these cracker box $100,000 houses like crazy, and yes, unfortunately, they are building row after row after stinking row of cookie-cutter cracker box houses. Just carbon copies of cheap, ugly U.S. subdivisions. That's all they are. Without an ounce of creativity, really. But to your average Latin guy making $300 or $400 a month, he thinks they're just great. Now, from the developer's point of view, who are his prospective clients? The average Latin? The guy making $300 or $400 a month? That's, you know, 70 or 80% of the population. Can't you see there's a total disconnect from reality here? Because, you see, based on that 6 times your yearly salary number, The average guy making $300 a month could just barely afford a mortgage on a house that was worth $24,000. And I'll tell you right now, no one's building houses down here for $24,000. None of the private developers or private contractors anyway. So, even if you consider that a very high percentage of families here pool their resources, the husband and wife work and the kids chip in too, even so, let's say they brought in twice the average salary, $600 a month. Then they could actually afford to get a house that's worth about $43,000 based on that bank loan standard of 6 times your income level. And I'll tell you, there are no developers down here that I know of that are building houses for $40,000 or $50,000. Seems like the very lowest of low-end houses you can buy run around $60,000 or so. Nothing really more than glorified garages in our eyes. And even if houses like that were easily available to the average person down here, almost none of those families could actually qualify because they need the proof and the paperwork that they're actually working and bringing home a salary. They'd have to prove to the bank that they actually were making $600 a month. Although there might be one person in the family who's working on the books, making the average $3 or $350 a month and can prove it with check stubs. The rest of the money coming into the household is usually off the books. Like, for example, the mother is a maid or a cleaning lady or selling Amway or Tupperware, or maybe she has a kiosk in front of the house. All for cash and off the books, of course. And the kids, they're off the books too. They've been known to sell all kinds of stuff. Fruit, candy, roses, newspapers, smoothies, you name it. And in order to qualify for a bank loan, even if you're making $600 a month, you have to prove somehow with paperwork that it's actually coming in. And if you're taking cash off the books, it don't count. And cash off the books is pretty much the backbone of the economy down here. I'd say it's at least a 50% cash society. Gotta love it, huh? So the bottom line is, this building boom is composed of tens of thousands of cookie-cutter matchbox houses. Average value, about $100,000 each. And to qualify, you got to make a minimum of about $1,500 a month, which is 4 or 5 times what the average Latin brings home. In fact, the mortgages on those so-called average houses are only doable for the upper 5% of the Latin population. So I hope now you can see that the whole real estate thing is terribly lopsided here. And do remember, I'm just talking about the average house in one of these new developments and subdivisions. There are also a ton of what we'd call upper middle class or higher end subdivisions too, where the houses start at around $150,000 on up to $400,000. And in that case, the potential buyers are really narrowed down to 1 or 2% of the Latin population. And as far as that goes, I just don't get it. I look in the Sunday newspaper and see the real estate supplements and the glossy magazines. There are dozens and dozens of those so-called upscale subdivisions too. And I can tell you this, all you have to do is drive by one of those completed subdivisions at night and you can see there are very, very few lights on in the place, except for the street lights, of course. Meaning, most of those things are just big white elephants that no one's ever going to live in. Now, earlier when I mentioned that the average Latin family could probably get a mortgage on a $25,000 house, if they could scrape up the down payment, which is highly unlikely. The other problem being there are no decent houses for $25,000, not even down here. Now, I'm not saying there aren't $25,000 houses in bad sections of town. There are even $10,000 and $15,000 houses in really crapola areas. So obviously, that's where the poor folks live, not us. When I mentioned there are no new housing projects that sell houses for $25,000, I was talking about regular, normal housing built by a developer, not subsidized housing, because yes, there are subsidized housing projects here, and brand new housing that goes for as little as, get this, $5,000. Of course, houses like that are nothing more than plain old block cubes with a laminate steel roof on them, but it's 100 times better than living in a dirt floor shack. And who is subsidizing? Well, almost always, some do-gooder group from the States, or the World Bank, or the IMF, and Habitat for Humanity, of course, and 100 other charities that come down and build houses. Now, you have to remember, the houses these folks build are not anything you or I would ever care to live in. They're just glorified concrete block garages. But it does allow some very lucky poor people who live in tin shacks and dirt floors, out in the boonies usually, to have, for once in their life, infinitely better shelter. Now, it used to be they used to give these houses away for free, but they found out in quick order, when people get free stuff, they don't care for it or appreciate it as much. So now at least these do-gooder charities are charging a fee, basically a very, very low monthly payment mortgage, which, in theory, should instill some pride in ownership, but most of the time that's just a pipe dream. Because when you go back to these housing developments 5 or 10 years later, well, believe me, most of the time you don't want to visit. It's just too sad. But, you know, you have to start somewhere, and it's that first-world do-gooder mentality that gets it off the ground. But unfortunately, in the long run, it always makes the giver, the do-gooder, feel better than the receiver. And I could prove my point by bringing up about 10 or 20 or 50 examples, but you get the idea. Now, I've seen a lot of do-gooder house-building projects down here that charge the homeowner $1,000, $5,000, or $10,000 on a mortgage basis. And it's the charities that work out these deals for repayment. And even so, many times these families just can't pay. But, you know, in this case, we're talking about the very poor. We're not talking about middle-class people here. Groups like Habitat for Humanity are not building houses for people who make $300 to $600 a month. They go deep in the boonies to areas where people don't have electricity or running water. And you do have to give them some credit for that because it takes a certain kind of person. Sometimes I wish I was that selfless, but I'm not. And besides that, I just can't wear a t-shirt with a smiley face on it or anything that looks like somebody's idea of Jesus. Oh, and speaking of t-shirts, you know, when I first started this show, The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, more than 3.5 years ago, I mentioned in one of the very early shows that if you really want to treat some of the local Latin people to a gift, a meaningful but inexpensive gift, I said just bring them down a t-shirt with any kind of English language lettering on it. Any kind of logo would do. A bar, a pool hall, a rock and roll t-shirt, a sports t-shirt, Mickey's Malt Liquor, Hooters, Harley, whatever. Even one with a stupid gringo cliche on it like, have you hugged your psychiatrist lately? Or the mind-numbing, have a nice day. You know, up to recently, those were really great cheap gifts, and the kids in the neighborhood, your cleaning lady, the maintenance guy, they all would just go nuts for that stuff. But if you've been down here in the last year or so, you'll have noticed every young Latin, rich or poor, has a collection of English language t-shirts they wear all the time but don't understand. More on that next time, so stay tuned.
South of the border, down Mexico way.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And don't forget to check out expatwisdom.com to sign up for your free reports on Latin America. See you next time. Nos vemos.
She was a picture.